And now for our weekly programme, Joan Knows, we listen to a summer special prepared by Sister Janet Ferns, currently press officer for the Pontifical Mission Societies, but until just a few months ago, a colleague of ours here at Vatican Radio's English feature programme. She sat down with our resident Vatican expert, Joan Lewis, to talk about one of Rome's less famous basilicas.
Joan Knows. Conversations with Joan Lewis.
Well, Joan, for our summer special, we're visiting a basilica that many people don't get to visit.
And it's really a shame. It is so beautiful, so steeped in history. It just doesn't happen to be in the exact, precise center of Rome as a St. Mary Major or St. Peter's might be. And we're talking about the Basilica of St. Lawrence outside the walls. Even St. Paul's outside the walls is better known, of course. The people at the basilica told me it is also considered, St. Lawrence's, one of the patriarchal basilicas. Normally, the number 4 comes up with the term patriarchal basilica. But this church is really kind of a 2-for-1 treat, because what you have, the original church, again, we go back to the Emperor Constantine, who very much liked the story of St. Lawrence, because St. Stephen is also in this. He loved the story of St. Lawrence, who was a deacon and a martyr, and actually, when he found his body, decided to build a basilica to protect the tomb where St. Lawrence was, and then to build a basilica around. He was a great basilica builder, as we have seen from our history. So St. Lawrence's tomb was originally in an area known as Ager Veranus. It was land owned by a gentleman, Lucius Verus. Anyway, today on that property is the Verano Cemetery, a very big, beautiful cemetery in Rome. And the Church of St. Lawrence, the Basilica, is also known as the St. Lawrence at the Verano. But to go back to the basilica, why do I say it's like a 2-for-1 treat? It's almost a 3-for-1 treat, because you have the original Constantinian basilica. Then another one was built by Pope Pelagius, 579 to 590, when he was pope, because he kind of saw the decay of the first basilica. And then later you have Pope Honorius, 1216 to 1227, seeing the decay of the previous ones and adding on to that.
And Honorius was the pope who was around when St. Francis of Assisi was around, and he was the one who had the dream about rebuilding the church getting Francis to help him.
Indeed. I had forgotten about that association, but that's the exact same time frame. Now, I mentioned earlier, by mistake, St. Stephen, but we do have to the Church of Constantine, over the tomb of the saint, we did have the body of St. Stephen brought, and then later St. Justin. So those three are entombed in the Basilica of St. Lawrence outside the walls. And what you have really are two churches, in the sense that we said that Pope Honorius in the 13th century had this grandiose project to expand and embellish the existing churches. And what he did, in the previous church, there was a famous, beautiful, striking, triumphal arch, which most of your major basilicas had or have today. And what he did, he took that as his departure point, and he proceeded to build a new church out and away from the triumphal arch. So the two basilicas are joined, as I wrote in my book, kind of like Siamese twins, and they're joined at the triumphal arch. So when you enter the basilica, you're in the church built by Honorius. You proceed up the center aisle to a point where there's steps directly below the triumphal arch, and once you ascend these steps, you are then in the Pelagian basilica. So what is fascinating about this is to see you have the 300s Constantine, 500s Pelagius, and then the medieval Honorius. the different architectures, the windows, the stories, the columns, the diversity of the columns, the floors. I mean, it really is like walking into two entirely different churches where you assume once there was a wall in the middle and somebody took it down. They're just so different. And one of the most striking things, I guess maybe I noticed it, it stood out as a woman. In the Pelagian Basilica, to make a lot of light come in the church, there were, to render it more luminous, there was a series of arched windows on the main level, as well as the upper story. And interestingly enough, the upper story, what would be like the second floor of another home, was called the matrone. And this was the area of the church that was reserved for women only at one time. And they were always on an upper level. But the interesting history, as I say, of the church, it covers so many periods, literally 1,100 years, of architecture and sculpture and the floors, the absolutely amazing floor, glorious mosaic and marble floors that were done in this church. And you almost like want to sidestep. How can I walk down the aisle without stepping on the floor? I mean, they're so utterly beautiful. And you'd love to go into an artistic, we don't have the time to go into the artistic aspect of the church. I just really would like people just to get on the tram and go out there and see this, because it is a very special church, again, because of that history. But also, interestingly enough, in this church is the burial place of Pius IX. Now, we know after St. Peter, he is the second longest reigning pontiff. And what is interesting about his burial place, he just wanted to be, he loved this church. He loved the three saints buried there. He wanted to be buried in a very simple tomb and as close as possible to the saint to whom he was very devoted. Well, the people of Rome thought otherwise. And so the Catholics from around the world felt that he should be honored in a fashion befitting his amazing papacy. So they felt he should be remembered with grandeur, and grandeur it was, if you have ever seen his tomb. Once you get down there, and I recommend going in the morning, that's about the only time there's a guardian there that will actually take you down. There's a grate in the church, gated door, and you have to have the guardian open this for you. It's just not open to anyone who goes. And I discovered guardians are there, seem to be there more in the morning than at any other time. Anyway, you get down in this tomb. It is just astonishing, and the senses swim with color and the brilliance of the mosaics, the precious stones used, the metals, every square inch of the hall as you walk in of the tomb itself is just covered. So you have ruby reds and fiery golds and glittering greens. It really, really is. The senses, you just have to stand back and say, oh my word. But there also, one very special thing which struck me were mosaics on the entrance wall. I found these particular five worthy of note. There's medallions picturing St. Alphonsus de Liguori and St. Francis de Sales, of course, patron of all of us who are journalists and writers. And he proclaimed both of them, Pius IX did, doctors of the church. So that's why they are figured in these medallions. Then there's a medallion which is a homage of the Christian world honoring Pius IX on his priestly jubilee. The fourth medallion is his proclaiming the definition of the dogma of the Immaculate Conception. And then the fifth medallion honors the definition of the dogma of papal infallibility. So it's a church where, to be honest, 2 hours would just begin to scratch the surface. If you're interested in learning the history of the different basilicas, of the men the papacies who built him, Pius IX, oh my word, that's half an hour right there. So it's a church that unfortunately people don't know as much about, and I hope they make an effort when they're in Rome. It was one of the seven churches that I highlighted as one of the major stopping points. This is the fifth patriarchal basilica, is one of the major stopping points for the Jubilee year.
Well, from what you said, the church would certainly seem to bring all the history of the church into the present.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's the first millennium of art, of men of the church. I mean, of Constantine, who allowed Christians to freely practice their faith. And then of two popes, of a third pope being buried there. He came later on. But the first 1,000 years, there's the various renovations, additions, embellishments. And you can just step in to this basilica and see the 1,000 years of art. Architecture, sculpture, how they've evolved.
But there's also a value, I think, in these old churches where you've got different saints buried. When you've got the tomb, there's a sort of realization that, hey, he or she was real.
Right.
You can be in touch, you feel that you're in touch with them.
Very, very special. And then there's all sorts of wonderful stories that come up linked with them. Maybe the original story, of course, is always linked to their death, how they died. Were they martyrs? But I mean, even it is said after his death that St. Lawrence appeared to one of the monks. And there is an altar in the chapel of St. Ciriaca, and a white marble altar. And there's a legend that says that St. Lawrence appeared to a monk and told him, for every mass celebrated at this altar, a soul would enter heaven. I mean, you know, wouldn't you want to take all your monks and have someone say a mass every hour on the hour?
Sure.
I would.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Joan.
Thanks to Joan Lewis and to Sister Janet Ferns for that summer special.